Hi and welcome to Matrix Moments. This is Saloni, and as part of our Founder Conversation series, we have with us today Nitin Kamath, founder and CEO of Zerodha, India's first tech-led discount broking model. Nitin is in conversation with Vikram Vaidyanathan, Managing Director at Matrix Partners India. Through the course of this episode, Nitin talks about the initial years and the struggle that went into the early parts of his journey, his motivation behind founding Zerodha, what it takes to actually build a strong founding team early on, as well as the qualities and traits he looks for when hiring people. Nitin specifically touches upon the learnings from his relationship with his co-founder and brother Nikhil Kamath. He also goes on to talk about the reason behind not raising any form of external capital till date, his future plans, and the way forward for Zerodha. Tune in.
So, Nitin, I still remember coming to your first office, that family bungalow office in Jayanagar.
Right.
And I remember feeling an amazing energy. It was very calm.
Right.
It seemed like there was amazing inspirational work happening there. Talk a little bit about the early days, why you started a broking company at that time, and how it all evolved.
No, I mean, so I started trading the markets quite early, right? And so I traded for like 12 years before Zerodha started. And I don't really think I could have done any other business other than broking, you know, because that's where the core competency was.
So now you started at 17, started trading at 17, started the company at like 28. Something.
Yeah, something like that. In between, I went bust twice. So I worked in a call center for 3-4 years.
Yeah.
And then I became a franchisee of a bigger broker firm in 2005. And in 2008, when the markets fell, made a little bit of money. And it just enough money to get a license. You know, because if you want to become a broker, you need to put deposits on the exchange. So we took a license on the exchange. And the funny thing is, we started a business as a partnership firm because the deposit requirement was much lesser, you know, being a partnership firm. We actually converted the partnership to public limited only last year. Now, we had thought that we will shift soon, but then, it took us 8-9 years to do that, you know. Yeah. And so 2010, we started in this small little office where we had that Reliance money, you know, where I was a franchisee. And the bungalow house that you saw, I think we moved there in 2012-13, you know, after I think we had like 30 people on the team.
Yeah.
So we had to scale up. And we've been extremely frugal, you know. So, you know, whatever we could save some money, you know, we have tried to do that, you know. That's how the business
started. How important was the, you know, boom bust that you saw?
Right.
And in terms of your formative stages of your journey?
I mean, those 3 years I worked in a call center is where I think I learned all my real life skills, you know, because I used to trade during daytime and I used to work in the nights. And you know, in the nights I used to sell. You know, I used to, you know, do telesales to the US. I mean,
yeah.
I've sold everything from mobile phones to DVDs to, you know, like everything to people in the US. You know,
yeah.
And so I think after starting business and I've actually looked back, I think I've actually learned what I was learned in those 3 years working and trying to, you know, hustle and etc. You know, actually helped the business quite a bit. And even the first 1-2 years of Zerodha, I mean, a lot of cold calling happened, you know. And I think that cold calling requires a certain skill set, you know.
Yeah.
And not everyone can just pick up a phone and make a call, you know.
Yeah.
So I think
it's truly a humbling experience.
Absolutely. I mean, the way, you know, but the thing is, I personally like to sell on the phone versus selling in real, because I'm not a very social person. On the phone, you can be whatever you want, right? You know, you can suddenly grow your balls and, you know, just be.
Yeah.
Whatever you want to be like. So, so it was, I think I've had, you know, most fun in my life also during my call center days.
Yeah.
So,
you know, for our listeners, you know, we talked about 10,000 hours in a space. Truly, he had 100,000 hours in a space before he started, right? And when I hear you talk about trading and how passionate you are about that business, I think that's what's made you truly successful.
Yeah, I mean, like a lot of people keep asking me, you know, how has business reached here, bootstrap, etc.
Yeah.
I say, I mean, I think it's, you know, to bootstrap, you know, if you want to bootstrap, I think you need to have some edge, other edge on the business,
yeah.
Right? I mean, either you have deep pockets or you have some core competency edge.
Yeah.
I think I understand, like, you know, even today, for example, I spend 2-3 hours interacting with our customers online. You know, we have a lot of these initiatives.
So, double click on that and on that consumer focus. And initially, you started with the focus on the day trader,
right.
That's evolved more to, you know, long-term investors.
Yeah.
Now it's evolving even more to millennials.
Right.
how do you keep in touch with the consumer and how do you make sure that everybody in the organization is sort of like that?
I mean, yeah, so when we started the business, I exactly knew the person whom we were trying to build the business for, right? Who was an active day trader, speculator. That was me, right? And whatever I wanted, I think we built it in the first three, 4 years of the business. But around 2014-15, we realized that, you know, that audience is really shallow. I mean, I think India has not more than 300 to 400,000 people who actually speculate. So we said, you can't really build a business, you know, just focusing on this. And I got extremely lucky to find Kailash, who heads our tech, in 2014. And I somehow convinced him to join us. And so we thought of this new age experience, you know, that we can build. Because until then, it was all vendor-based products. You know, there was no tech in-house. The only tech I've done is Excel sheets. I mean, I haven't personally done any tech in my life, right? So, so until then, we're kind of leveraging vendor products and just selling it better. And once he came on board, around him, we were able to build this new gen kind of products and very minimalistic, very non broking by kind of products. And then that's when it hit on us that, dude, you know, now we need to kind of build this product and for the masses and not just for this 300 to 400,000 kind of audience. And because, you know, I think because we as a business brand, you know, interact with our customers so much, I think we are always in sync with what people need, right? I mean, if you look at our blog posts, I mean, there are blog posts with 1,000 comments, you know, I mean, there are, you know, the Varsity, our education module that we run is probably after Investopedia, the largest in the world right now on capital markets. And we run a Q&A initiative called Trading Q&A, just almost like Stack Overflow, but for traders, right? As in, so these are all places where we are very active. And so you keep getting this input from the customers. And so it's, and the team as such, the core team is actually really small.
Yeah.
Right? As in, our tech team is a 30-member team, which is just ridiculous, you know, for everything that we've built as a business till now. So it's very easy to keep 30 guys in sync versus keeping 300 guys in sync, right? So, I mean, and it's been a conscious choice, you know, before, and I think I'm influenced by Kay, you know, Kailash on this, because before him, I used to think that throwing money and people will solve problems.
Yeah.
And, I mean, I was wrong, you know, and then we took this conscious choice of saying that, let's keep the team small. So what it also meant was that we'll attempt only those things which is very core to the business. You know, in the sense, we will not. I don't want to go build a lending product, for example, you know, which I don't understand.
Yeah.
Or I don't want to sell insurance, which I don't understand. Right? You know. So we said we're just going to do what we understand well, because we have only these many resources to work with. And so I think, you know, it's kind of played out okay till now. You know, so.
No, I'm just going to keep interjecting with learnings from this, because it's amazing how focused you are. So if you look at what he said, listen to the consumer, still talks to consumers every day. Everybody is just listening to cues from the consumer before they're building products. Stick to the core, don't get distracted by all the noise, and that's really hard to do, and I know you've really kept your head doing that. And then finally keep a very small team together, because it's just much more easy to be nimble.
Absolutely.
I think those are just fantastic learnings. So switching to teams, and you, all of you can see how humble he is, given what he's achieved and so on. And I see that same sort of strain through almost every team member. So it's close from you.
Right.
Very humble, very curious, always listening to external input. How do you imbibe that as a culture?
I mean, we just hired people who we thought are going to be like me, you know, in a sense. No, I mean, see, the thing is, I don't know if I'm right or wrong in this. Like, we don't, I mean, I have nothing against IIT-IIM guys, right? But we don't have a single person from any pedigree college, you know. So we've actually gone after people.
So what do you look for? Most people look for that as a surrogate for smarts and hunger. And
I mean, so we've actually hired the core team. You know, I think we were extremely lucky that we found each other, right? As in, I don't think there is any way to go find them, right? As in, you have to, you know, serendipity and all of that, right?
Yeah.
So. But all the newer people, I mean, it was hiring a lot of young guys and then filtering out and getting, you know, give them an opportunity to grow within the organization quickly.
Yeah.
You know? So, I mean, also the way we have structured the business, it's actually a really dumb business that we have. In a sense, you know, it doesn't take too much to support.
Yeah.
Right? As in, we have just one product that we sell to every single customer of ours. right? And conscious choice was not to have this, you know, high net worth product, low net worth, you know, like how financial services firms generally complicated. So we just have one thing to sell. You know, even if you come to our office and speak to an admin guy, he'll probably sell you an account, right? You know, and there's nothing complex to sell about it, you know, so, and that makes it extremely easy to support the business. And like, for example, you know, every single customer of ours has paid an account opening fees to open an account with us, right? And 300 to 500 rupees, right? And so what I'm meant to say is that we never broke that rule for anyone. You know,
going back on team, who did you not hire and what were the choices you made? Because I know after a point in time, everybody wanted to join.
Right.
But you were pretty selective about who you...
I mean, see, the thing is, like, today, everyone who comes, reaches out, is for a senior role.
Yeah.
And I'm very sure that I'm not hiring for a senior role.
Yeah.
Right? Because I want the guys who've been around, who've struggled with me, and, you know, helped the business grow till here, and I need to first give them an opportunity.
Yeah.
Right? And if I'm not able to find the skill sets, then I'll go out and look for others. So until now, we haven't hired a single person.
So let's say you had to hire one in a particular role,
right?
And just making it up. And what would you look for to make sure that they fit well with the team? And this is something lots of founders struggle with.
No, I mean, I've met a lot of people, right? So we are starting this loan against securities business,
right?
And none of us really have the skills of going and raising money because, you know, loan against securities means that we have to somehow, you know, beat commercial paper, whatever, right? We need to raise some money to be able to lend it.
Yeah.
So I've met a few, you know, in that. But, I mean, I don't know. It's just, like, it's very tough to bond, you know.
You have to say there's one quality that really you look for and one quality that you don't.
No, I think, I'd look for someone who's firstly very humble, right? I mean, who doesn't, because I think, you know, I give a lot of credit to whatever's happened in my life to luck. Right. And I believe, you know, I mean, of course, you know, you need to work hard, you need to have skills and blah, blah. But I think this whole right place, right time is extremely important. And I think I kind of like to be around people who appreciate that.
Yeah.
Right. And, you know, as soon as people kind of start over emphasizing on how their skills have helped them.
Yeah.
Right. Because I know 100 people are more skilled than I am and, you know, who know this industry better than I do. But they aren't here. Right. You know, so. So I think, I mean, I think that starts off there, right? It starts off saying,
I really appreciate what you said on the humility, and I'll tell everyone, this man definitely makes his own luck. And I've seen him, and I think it is true. And I've seen him in different. I know we were on a trip somewhere, and it was a big day, and I remember you dropping everything else to just focus on that moment because you knew that it was such a big moment, that particular day. But I think that's what it takes, and I think I know you put it down to a lot of timing, but lots of people had that timing. But how you act in that timing, I think I've seen you do it multiple times. I think that's
I think you know, like trading the markets, I think. Is a humbling experience. You know, it's a roller coaster, right? And I think like my personal biggest skill set, I think, is that I don't react, right? Because, and the reason I don't react is because if I reacted, I couldn't trade the markets, right? So, I mean, and this whole business of stockbroking is not a very easy business, you know? I mean, because at every point, like right now we're talking and potentially there could be some news that affects and our customers are leveraged, so they can lose more money than what they have. So, you know, so we just run, you know, extreme amounts of risk all the time.
Yeah.
And it's just, you know, you need to be wired in a certain way to run this business, you know. And
I want to come back to the risk point, but staying on team, I know one of the most important team members, you have your brother.
Right.
And that can go either way.
Right.
Talk about what learnings you have on sort of founding a team with your brother, founding a team with one of your best friends, as most co-founders do.
Right.
And how do you maintain both that personal relationship as well as the professional relationship as it matures?
Well, I mean, so before Zerodha started, right, I mean, I kind of, the writing was on the wall that he's a better trader than I am, right? I mean, there was no point, both of us...
It's hard for an older brother to
do that. I mean, absolutely. I mean, it's ego issue. I mean, we are extremely competitive, you know, we played chess together, we played sports together, you know, a lot of sport, and we are probably the most competitive guy on the field when you put us on it. But it was kind of obvious that, you know, like he used to make more money than I used to, right? So then, you know, there's no way to...
The scorecard is there.
Yeah, as in you can't fake it in trading. You know, that's the best thing about trading, right? As in, and he's generally a little more pessimistic. And I've realized that's the reason he's better at trading. And I'm extremely optimistic, right? And I'm looking at everything as saying this will work, right?
Yeah.
And so when he started the business, you know, the thing was, you know, we said, dude, you know, you've got great skills trading. Why don't you continue trading? And I think I'm more wired to kind of, you know, I interact with a lot of people. I mean, it's extremely tough for him to, you know, get him interact with customers, right? As in, so, you know, we kind of realize we each other have skill sets that kind of, you know, helps, you know, in different ways. One of the reasons for us not having to, you know, having bootstrapped this whole thing is actually him. The first 1-2 years, you know, it was his trading income that actually sustained the business, you know. And we decided that he's going to look at trading and I'm going to run broking. And I have not taken a single trade after that.
Yeah.
Right. From 2010 onwards, I mean, of course, I test out our products, you know, small little trades. I mean, a trade that matters to me, I haven't taken till then.
Yeah.
And I never go and ask him, dude, what's happening to the trading P&L.
Yeah.
And similarly, he never comes to me and ever talks to me saying, you know, why is the mobile app like this? You know, so that conversation never happens. And that has ensured that the relationship is not affected with, you know, whatever. So I think it's actually him, and then I consider Kay, you know, as a co-founder himself.
Yeah.
You know, he joined 3 years late, but then I don't think we would have been here as a business if not for him. You know, it all worked out quite okay.
So any tips for co-founders or very close from a personal relationship standpoint on how to keep the personal and professional?
I think it is, firstly, I think like looking back, I think where it could have affected. You see, if things don't work out, right, that's a different kind of a relationship.
Yeah.
But when things work out, I think it becomes about who gets the credit.
Yeah.
Right. I think that's where more conflicts happen. And the way I am very open about him making money or trading that survived us, and he's the best trader and et cetera, he, you know, acknowledges, dude, you know, you are the guy because of which.
Yeah.
So as long as there are no egos in place, I think
it's
okay. And I think you need to demarcate, you know, tasks. I don't think it, you know, there have been times when me and him have had conversations, but it has been on things, very stupid things, you know, where, say, it could have been a sofa that we want to buy, right? And we haven't, you know, when we started the business, we never thought who is going to decide on what sofa, what color is going to come, right? As in, inside his room, right? For me, in my head, we are building a brokerage business. So in his room, the sofa has to be what I think should be, right? I know. So, I mean, whereas he probably wanted a different kind of sofa. And so, I mean, so we've had a conversation about that, but I mean, it's never been about business. You know?
Yeah.
I mean, it's
So, going back to that conversation on risk, and I know you think about how much risk is in the business, how much risk is in the market, what's the systemic risk, and even though, you know, everyone thinks of you as a very calm guy, I know how worried and anxious you are in terms of risk. And, you know, how I think about fintech founders and risk being that central. When did that sort of penny drop for you on risk is the most important thing that you're going to manage?
No, I mean, see, the thing is, the only way a trader can survive, right, like an active trader, especially someone who's put his own capital on tape. You know, when I was a trader, you know, or when Nikhil was trading, you know, we were trading our own money, right?
Yeah.
It's not someone else's money. And that requires different kind of skill sets, right? As in, and the only way you can survive that is by appreciating this whole risk aspect. And, you know, I recently tweeted about it. I think the way I look at risk today is that I'll do things only when I know that I can blow up the entire amount and I'm okay with it, right? And one of the points, I think, one of the reasons Zerodha has always been, you know, reasons for Zerodha to be successful also is that we took some money off the table and we said, dude, we've done okay in our lives, right? And this money is enough to sustain our lifestyle, right? You know, for the rest of the life. Now, you know, we just go all in, right? As in, right? You know, so today when I look at Zerodha, I don't worry about our money in the business. You know, I'm saying, you know, we have to grow this business. You know, I think we need to, you know, do our bit to make a dent to this country in helping one industry fix itself.
You know?
I mean, and then we do whatever it takes, right? As in.
So, what advice do you have for fintech founders on, you know, your risk management? And we've talked about, you know, how much risk is floating around in the fintech ecosystem, and what part of the business do you build first?
No, like I said, personally, I think. People firstly have to sit down and say, what's the risk in this, right? I, like a lot of people I speak to don't understand that, right? As in, what's the maximum you can blow out on this, right? And then you need to kind of make peace with it. Like, if you can't make peace with it, don't do it, right? Because it's almost like playing, you know, poker on a table where the stakes are too high, right? You can never make money on that table, right? So, because you're always worried about losing money, right? And I think because the chances of you taking irrational kind of decisions when you're not made peace with the maximum loss is quite high. And and today, I think, you know, I think a lot of founders don't think about risk as much, because maybe it's because it's someone else's money. But I think it's important to think of it as your own money and say that what's the maximum you're ready to lose. And then
I love that learning on, you know, take only as much risk as you're willing to blow up. But I do think you also architected your business such that, you know, your costs are all, costs and yield are matching that risk.
Right.
Because your costs are always super low and super
variable.
Because it is a thin margin business.
Absolutely.
And you're always keeping risk pretty much in tune with where you're returning.
I mean, as I said, right, as in hindsight, all of these things seem like I've done smart decisions, but, you know, I was just going with the flow, you know, so because, as I said, you know, I mean, not having external capital meant that we never had to chase growth.
Yeah.
Right.
So let's talk about that. You know, I'm not going to let you go without talking about that. I've heard you say, you know, I don't want this obligation of returning money.
Right.
And so it's not an obligation.
Right.
It would be a privilege to invest.
Right.
How do you think about, you know, not having raised capital?
Right.
And I think you've done fantastically well. And today, the decision is still not to raise capital.
Right. So the thing is, for a while in my life, I used to do portfolio advisory. So I used to manage people's money, you know, and I used to trade for them. We did quite well, in a sense, we made money for people, but that obligation that came along, right? People, middle of the night, someone calls up and says, dude, what's happening? Market fell in the US.
Yeah.
Are we okay? I mean, I hated those phone calls, you know, and so there is some legacy issue probably, you know, in the sense, you know, I've come from that experience of having, we're different kind of people, you know, retail customers who gave 10, 15 lakhs to be managed, et cetera, right? But, when we started the business, we needed money, so I did go around.
Yeah.
But I think it was a horrible time to go around asking for money for a brokerage firm. Right? I mean, 2010 is the worst year for broking as an industry ever.
Yeah.
Right? Again, as I said, right place, right time, timing, etc. I mean, starting business then was extremely foolish. But if you look at today, it was extremely smart. You know, so and then. So yeah, so the first 1-2 years, you know, we didn't really have an option. So we said, let's do whatever to make this work with the money we have. But then by second, third year, we started making money, right? And then I didn't really see a use of raising money. In a sense, I didn't know what I'll do by raising money, right? Because I...
Did you ever think about, you know, I can, you know, have my equity marked up to a certain value, other people will value it?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I'm probably very traditional in that sense. For me, like, you know, even today when people talk about this valuation of Zerodha, like, so I'm like, dude, whatever's in the bank is my value. I'm not even thinking of, like, you know, what is the money in the bank account is actually my real value. You know, so everything else is just paper. I mean, and it can be here today, tomorrow.
It's amazing. And, you know, one of the things that I love talking to you about is that you just drown out the noise. And then entire fintech valuation noise, and I think you do a fantastic job of just.
I mean, then you get to focus on the business, right? As in, otherwise, you know, this whole already there's so much volatility in our lives, and you know, now you have to worry about this. Oh, I'm worth $1 billion today. I'm worth $500 million. I mean, it's not worth it.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, I think personally, I'm in a super lucky spot that I have everything to kind of continue my lifestyle for the rest of my life.
Yeah.
And now, you know, you're just trying to make a difference for this country, you know, so that's...
I'll just remark on two things. One, you know, the fact that you feel that way, and I've told you this before, that you feel obliged to make a return for investors is what makes you a fantastic custodian of money, and that's why we would have... And the second, the fact that you started in a really bad time, and we've seen this repeatedly, that the best businesses actually come from actually a very... crappy time in the market where they don't actually get money and they just are built sort of the right way.
Mm-hmm.
So just last question on the external capital. Let's say today, with the capital that's available and chasing different fintech, if you had to start like as a young frugal founder, would you still not raise money or would you raise money?
I don't think there's an opportunity in broking anymore.
Not broking,
fintech. See, the thing is, I think if there is a business where you have like high amounts of competency of being of understanding that business really well.
Yeah.
Maybe then you think of bootstrapping it, right?
Yeah.
But then if you want to build something that can be copied very easily by someone, I think you have to raise money. And there is
that's actually a great way of thinking.
You know, because otherwise, you know, the guy with the deeper pockets will catch up soon, right? But then this core competency can't really be bought.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, you know, I can't have $100 million and buy another Nitin, right? As in. You know, so I mean, that's how I look at it. You know, even when I speak to some of the startups that we work with today. I mean, I tell, you know, dude, if what you're building can be copied by someone very easily, I think you should raise money and go build your business and put some distance on the competition. But if not, you know, maybe give it a shot, you know, without raising it.
What's next for Zerodha? How do you think of sort of next 10 years? And I know you think of 10 year journey, you know.
Right. No, I mean, I think what I'm thinking is, how do we get more people to invest in the markets?
Yeah.
And until now, as a business, what we've done is, if someone had an intent to invest, we've offered a decent platform to come invest in. If someone had an intent to learn, we've offered a decent platform to learn. But I think the real problem to solve is, how do you grow the ecosystem itself, right? How do you get new people to come to the markets? And
do you see an inflection there on new people coming in? And do you see digital investing being much more of a pull product than a push product?
Unfortunately, you know, the way financial products are structured today, I think it's still a push product.
Everything's push.
Yeah. You know, I don't think people are going to get up one day and say, I want to buy a mutual fund, right?
Yeah.
That's probably because it's just complicated to buy a mutual fund today.
Yeah.
You need some help. I don't even know if you know, people might take small decisions on a digital platform, you know, if I want to save 5,000 rupees a month, right? But as and when the amount gets bigger, you know, people will need, you know, help of advisors and stuff like that. So, So the way we are looking at it is probably we need to maybe get into manufacturing of products. I mean, we just applied for an AMC license. On the business side, we have an NBFC license now to do loan against securities. Not something that I enjoy, but people have been asking for it.
Yeah.
We've been working on allowing Indians to invest in US stocks. As Indians, we don't get to invest in products that we consume. So the bet here is, will the millennial buy 100 rupees of Netflix, for example? You know? So that's something that, I mean, a lot of people are attempting it, but the problem, the broken experience there is remittance of money. It's not really the offering the investing experience. You know. So there we're trying to solve the remittance piece. And then on the business side, on the broking side itself, you know, we have this new initiative called Nudge, where we are saying that we will try to nudge people to take right decisions. I mean, yeah, nudge based on Richard Taylor's book.
Yeah.
You know, so same thing. So we just introduced our first nudge, which is, if someone's buying a penny stock, we tell him, you're buying a penny stock, don't do stupidity.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's right. People don't know. You know, so
actually preventing that mistake will actually build trust.
Yeah. You know, so and I don't think there are too many brokers around the world. Actually, there is no broker around the world who will say, don't do it.
Yeah.
Right. Because by not doing it, you are reducing one transaction, so you're actually reducing the revenue, right?
Yeah.
We actually are planning to give a kill switch, for example, right? So if you lose X amount of money, have a kill switch.
Yeah.
So automatically everything gets locked. You will not be able to trade. So it's almost like, you know, in poker, you are on tilt. Someone says, "Dude, take a break."
Yeah.
Right. So we are, you know, we are kind of structuring all of that kind of nudges within the platform. So yeah, it'll be interesting to see if we can actually help people.
Yeah.
You know, trade, invest better by using these nudges.
Yeah. And the reason, you know, some of our references are poker references, that, you know, him and I enjoy all kinds of sports, basketball, poker, music. So that's how some of the relationship has evolved. Just hearing you talk about how you are looking at the future, it's just so many learnings, and I just want to call out some of them. Right? One is just following the consumer, and you're just following where the consumer is going. I think the second is, when you're looking at any new opportunities, and there's so many new opportunities, you're always looking to build around the core.
Absolutely.
And not looking at, you know, going, you have so many different things that
I mean, how do you compete with someone who's got $1 billion? I mean, you have to do something around your core competence.
And you're always looking for the X factor on innovation. I think the one thing that, you know, we're also thinking about is how to make more of the digital financial product more pull than push.
Right.
And this thing about having new products, which are truly micro products, and you're going where the consumer is, and you can hopefully, you know, give them the exact nudge to buy something. I think that's something that we're seeing across the ecosystem. And I'm hoping more founders think about that in a much more actionable way. I can keep going, and I can keep getting learning from you. So thank you so much for doing this. You know, we wish you nothing but the best, and I'm hoping this Zerodha continues this journey, becomes... it's already the number one booking platform in India, but I'm hoping it becomes a fintech that truly the world can be proud of.
Cheers. So, thanks for having me.
Thank you.
Cheers.
Thank you for listening, and you can find the transcribed version of this podcast on matrixpartners.in. You can also follow us on Twitter and LinkedIn for more updates.